So really, we've created this whole different learning experience or competency development experience to really help accelerate the profession and to learn and adopt all of these new technologies, tools, and techniques.
All right, here we are once again. Might as well do something useful with our time together, right? Let's do this. Episode number 143 of Future Proof. I'm Bill Sheridan. I'm your host for this thing. How you doing, by the way? You okay? You doing okay? I hope y'all are okay, hanging in there. I'm glad you're here, that's for sure. I mean, it's sincerely glad that you're here. Like, there are a billion podcasts out there, folks, and you could have picked any of them to listen to today, and you chose this one. So thank you. I appreciate it. Really, truly do. Thanks for being here. Let's do this, shall we? You can't do the show until we do this. This week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories. By the way, that's really hard to say. Career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. I just want y'all to know how hard this job really is, folks. Hundreds of courses, dozens of instructors, unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. All right, good show this week. My guest is Donnie Shimamoto. You probably know Donnie. You've probably seen him talk at one or two or a dozen different conferences. He does a lot of that. You may have met him at one of those places, right? And if you did, you didn't forget about it. Great guy, great ambassador for this profession. His tagline on LinkedIn reads, "Improving the world one accountant at a time." And that just about sums up Donnie, I think. He's the founder and managing director of Intraprise Technologies. That's an advisory-focused CPA firm in Honolulu and elsewhere. He's also an incredibly active volunteer thought leader with the American Institute of CPAs, doing a lot of work in the information management and IT and assurance services areas. His latest gig, though, is what I really wanted to talk to him about. Donnie is leading the launch of the new Center for Accounting Transformation. And this thing, it's just right up our alley here at Future Proof. Listen to their mission. It reads, quote, "The center enables transformation by guiding members through the adoption and change required in order to step into the future of the accounting profession. We are not here to convince people to change, but rather to empower those who seek an alternative to the status quo." And wow, that just speaks to me, man, right? Bring it on. They're doing all of that, by the way, by doing this, quote, "providing professionals with a framework for utilizing innovations that are ready for adoption, the training and resources necessary to apply those innovations, and an opportunity to engage the talent and community needed to further their pursuit of innovative accounting practices that drive responsible and mindful business performance," end quote. And I bet you're thinking you didn't have all of that in you, did you? Well, think again, accounting pros, okay? That's you we're talking about. And if that weren't enough, Donnie is also a member of the Information Systems and Controls Task Force for the CPA Evolution Project, which is an effort led by the AICPA and the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy to transform the CPA licensure model. Experts say that transformation is critical given the rapidly changing skills and competencies that accounting and finance pros are going to need going forward. And that model focuses on a core of accounting, audit, and tax, plus disciplines that center on three areas, okay? Number one, tax compliance and planning. Number two, business analytics and reporting. And number three, information systems and controls. And this project, the CPA Evolution Project, it made some headlines recently when the AICPA and NASBA announced that they will unveil a new accounting curriculum in June. That's tied directly to that project. That's going to be part of a two-day event on June 15th and 16th. It's going to be hosted by the American Accounting Association. The AICPA's Sue Coffey says the curriculum provides educators with a roadmap to assure the next generation of students is ready to tackle the changing demands of the profession. And American Accounting Association CEO Yvonne Hinson, she says the project and the new curriculum will better prepare CPA candidates for the changing profession that they are about to enter. And all of this is going to culminate with the launch of a new uniform CPA exam in 2024. And Donnie's got plenty to say about that as well, given his role on CPA Evolution's Information Systems Task Force. So, you know, just plenty to catch up on here with Donnie Shimamoto. And we did just that. I sat down with Donnie recently to talk about the transformation that he sees within the profession. You know, what's happening, what's going to happen, what resources and training we're going to need to keep up with all of it, and how the CPA Evolution Project plays into all of that as well. And you know, you don't typically expect emotions to come into play when you're talking about accounting and finance, but they do today. Okay, Donnie and I, we broke some ground, folks. We get a little emotional talking about this great profession and where it's headed. So grab some tissues, but mostly just grab your crystal ball and take a closer look at where we're heading next. So here is my conversation with Donnie Shimamoto. Donnie, thanks for joining me. I guess I was just kind of curious. You travel probably as much as anybody I know. I'm kind of curious, have you been confined to Hawaii for the past year? What's life for you been like in the pandemic?
The past year really has been a change for me. You're right. Normally, I am on the road 50 to 60% of the time, speaking at different conferences, working on site with clients. And the last year I've been stuck in one place. And most people would say, well, I'd love to be stuck in Hawaii. And for me, working with a lot with the East Coast, Hawaii is 5 hours during non-daylight savings. Right now during daylight savings, it's 6 hours. And so if I had to get up for even a 9 a.m. Eastern meeting, that would have been 3 a.m. for me.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah. So I've actually been lucky enough that my brother and my cousin live in Las Vegas. And so I've been here in Vegas for the entire pandemic.
Oh, nice. Okay. So you're kind of time-wise splitting the difference there a little bit. Yeah. What you have any ideas about when travel is going to start picking back up for you? When does like quote unquote normal start to return in your life?
Yeah, I've actually I just went out away for spring break. My niece had spring break, so we went to California. So that was one of nice, and it made me realize how much I actually missed the travel and, you know, getting to experience all the different cities. And
yeah,
we met up with our cousins. But the actual work travel probably is going to start. Right now, it looks like it's going to be August. I'm looking forward to being at the Illinois CPA Society's show there. And we're going to talk about the changes really coming to the accounting profession and how, you know, emerging technologies and other things that are coming through are really going to change, especially now that we're all reopening up and starting to be able to relook at the future again, instead of just focusing on surviving.
Well, I think that's how I'll know that life is starting to crawl back to normal. If I bump into you in person, then we're probably making our way there slowly. So, so speaking of change, one of the recurring themes I've been hearing, you know, over the past year is how the pandemic has kind of served as an accelerator of sorts for new trends, particularly new technology. Everything seems to be evolving and being adapted faster than ever, thanks to this global crisis, at least according to, you know, the experts that you hear. I guess from your seat, how do you think that applies to our profession in terms of how fast things have been accelerating during this crisis?
I actually have said it, what you just said, which is I actually see the benefit of the pandemic in that it accelerated this digital transformations that have really needed to be accelerated. We've had the technology to work, but paperless for a long time. Remote meetings have been around for a long time. Even instant messaging, right? Chat, what everyone thinks of as chat. Like, we've had that since the 90s. Mm-hmm. And business really has not embraced this. Our profession has not embraced this. And there's always been this, well, it would be nice, but I really need to be in the office because, or I need my staff to be in the office because. Right. And the pandemic just broke all that down. And all of these companies that I've been talking to for years that have always had these excuses, everyone all of a sudden figured it out in two or 3 days, or maybe in a week. And so I look at that as the benefit of the pandemic. It really forced adoption of technology in a way that really needed to happen. And we've had these technologies for so long. So it's not like it was like everyone all of a sudden adopted all this cutting edge stuff with all this risk. These were tried and true technologies. And that's a good thing to me.
Does that kind of signal to you an evolution of sorts for the profession? Or is that just a sign that, you know, we all had to do what we had to do in order to survive and move forward? Or is this like actual, you know, steps forward in terms of our own evolution?
Well, I think what you're actually asking and these two paths are going to differentiate those firms and accounting departments or finance departments that are that we're going to see whether they are going to evolve. And those are the ones that are going to see this as, this is a step towards the future. This is the way we need to move. And I think that those that are going to take this and go, well, we just had to do this because of the pandemic. And now that things are going back to quote normal, we're going to go back to normal. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that I think we're going to see, well, slowly start to disappear, or maybe not so slowly start to disappear, mm-hmm. because I think this is the new normal. And you and Tom Hood have talked about this new normal, you know, on previous podcasts. And I fully believe in what you guys were talking about. This is going to be the new normal. This whole remote work, hybrid work, digitized work, like all of this is the new normal.
In general, do you think we're getting to the point where this profession is starting to, you know, let go of its stranglehold on the status quo and be a little bit more accepting of moving in new directions and trying new things?
I certainly hope so. You know, there's a really big difference in the mindset that's required around this. You need to think about managing remote and managing digital differently. My firm, for example, we hired our first remote worker in 2011. So it's been 10 years that we've been doing this. You know, we talk about me being in Hawaii, but my team, and we're a small firm, we are 13 people, but we have staff, we're headquartered in Hawaii, which we have, I think it's about 3 staff in Hawaii, but we also have staff in Washington State, California, Texas. I'm in Nevada. We have one staff here, mm-hmm. North Carolina and Indiana at this point. So we literally have people all around the U.S.
And that's truly a remote team then, yeah.
Actually, and to add to that, we also have some contractors that we work really closely with in Virginia and then in Vietnam.
Oh my gosh.
So we've kind of got that split out. We actually have 2 different sets of contractors that we work with in Vietnam. And then we just added, and then in our back office, we actually have an outsourced bookkeeping team that is based out of the Philippines. And we have an outsourced controllership team that is actually based out of India. So wow. You want to talk about remote work in the future, like even us as a small organization, you know, small firm, has we fully embraced this and leverage resources all over the globe.
That's remarkable. And I mean, were there, and you were kind of ahead of the curve. You know, you said 10 years ago, hiring on your first remote worker. What kind of, and obviously you embrace this type of mindset. What kind of hurdles have you had to jump, even as someone who gets it and wants to go there, what kind of obstacles or barriers were kind of impeding your progress, if at all? I mean,
I'll start off with what I said, which is the mindset. So I'll be honest, and I'll admit that our first remote worker was not intended to be a remote worker. It was actually a woman. She used to work for Accenture. So, you know, very highly qualified, great resume. She's originally from Hawaii. I actually went to college with her. She was looking to return to Hawaii. And but we didn't have a position for her yet. At that time, she had left Accenture because she had given birth to her first child. And she said, I didn't want to go back to full time and work the crazy hours. I want to have time with my daughter. And so we said, you know, we'd love to have you come to work with us. You know, and her intention was to move back to Hawaii. So we said, well, let's start off remote right now because we have a need. We can incorporate you in a remote work or in a remote position, knowing that you eventually come back to Hawaii. Well, a year, I think it was like a year or a year and a half later, she had tried several times coming back. Her husband actually is a silicon chip designer, so electrical engineer, and there's no silicon development in Hawaii. Right. So he had looked, you know, a lot, tried to find things. They could not find something that would match the salary requirements. And she said, you know, you just can't do it. And I told her, well, you know what? You've been doing such a great job remote, and I think we've figured out how to make this work. Which at that time, instant messaging was a lot. We used that quite a bit. And so we said, you know, why don't we just continue doing this? We'll just make sure that you're not scheduled to do anything that's on-site type of work. And she was actually a project manager for us. So she was remote project manager. She was the whole rest of the team was in Hawaii, and she was doing project management remotely. You know, as we've gone past that, we've learned a lot around how does someone manage from afar? And we had to learn a lot of that along the way. We also had to look at how do we start to onboard people? Because after we had several others, where we said, well, you know, this is working with her. Why don't we try it with some other ones? We already had, you know, established ourselves in California. So we actually had hired another quality control manager out of, this is when we were doing a lot of development. So it was a testing manager. You know, so it was a lot of learning about how do we get these people ingrained into our culture? How do we onboard them and help them feel part of the firm, that they're not just kind of this one-off? And we've come quite far, I think, in kind of figuring out the best practices, sometimes through error. Yeah. But a lot of it just kind of embracing the mindset and just being open to things.
Well, early on, it seems like there was a lot of that building the bridge as you cross it, right? In terms of that, to the point now where, I don't know, it just seems like, you know, those barriers that we all had early on to stuff like this don't necessarily exist anymore. The technology, you know, early on, the technology wasn't really there to make it a seamless kind of transition, but now it is, right? So really, I mean, maybe one of the few barriers that's still around is that mindset that you have. You know, it's just ourselves kind of getting in our own way.
I think that's true to start. And so I think, you know, you said the technology wasn't quite there. The technology was there. The adoption of the technology was not there, right? So I would adjust that statement a little bit. Yeah. But the other thing that I think is really important as we look at this is, a lot of people may have rushed to adopt, and people may have just grabbed whatever was there. And while that's okay to have gotten through this, I'm going to call it emergency situation, right? For this to be a sustainable mode of working, whether it's remote working, whether it's digitization, because I also saw that, you know, this whole concept of digitization really is kind of taking the paper and moving that into digital format. So we saw some people, their concept being enabling remote work was, you know, get scanners for everyone or train everyone how to use their phone to take pictures of documents and that instead. Well, right. If that's all still getting routed via email and stuff, that's just taking paper and making it digital. It's not right. Actual digital information, right? And so the need to actually embrace the actual tech, the rest of the technologies, and truly evolve. It doesn't have to be like completely like transform. Maybe it's a little evolve, but getting it to something that's more standardized, that's sustainable, that, yeah, I always like to tell this story of, you know, if you think about automation just by itself is taking something and it makes it quicker and faster. And that's the way we think of it, right? If I automate something, it'll be faster and more efficient. Mm-hmm. Well, if you've got a bad process and you have a bad process, you're going to have a faster, more efficient way of producing bad results.
Right.
Garbage in, garbage out, or even good stuff in, bad process, garbage out.
Right.
And you're going to have a lot more garbage coming out a lot faster if you automate this bad process. So you may have gotten a little bit of automation to get through something. People are finding like, hey, this is okay, but it's not really working.
Yeah.
Well, then you need to come back and look at your process and figure out, is this the right process? Because manual process doesn't always directly translate into digital process. You need to rethink the way you're looking at things.
That's a really good point. What kind of skills are we going to have to master in order to really, you know, take advantage of that type of mindset and thrive in this world? I mean, are the skills that we need to bring with us forward changing?
Definitely. And they've been changing for a while. And this one, for someone like me who sits between accounting and IT, you know, in our CITP, Certified Information Technology Professional, mm-hmm. right, the IT specialty within the CPA realm, we've always asked ourselves these questions on, you know, should CPA become the IT professional, or is it really this blend? And our answer has always come back, you know what, we are blend. And so while going into the future is not necessarily about becoming a programmer or even becoming a cybersecurity technician, it is about for us as accountants, it's really about learning to do some of these things that might have been considered IT. Now I'll give an example of, for example, the systems analyst role, which is really about coming in and, for example, understanding process and what is the underlying data structure and how do I automate that. Mm-hmm. But instead of the systems analyst role, maybe I'm going to look at this as the business analyst role. So what is the process? And I'm going to layer in the accounting pieces of, are there internal controls around this process? Should there be internal controls around this process? What is the underlying data structure? How does that roll not just into finance and perhaps eventually the general ledger, but what does this data tell us? What are the business drivers underlying this data? What type of reporting do I need around this data? And then what controls do I need to put around to ensure that I have accurate reporting? Whether it's about the number of widgets that we produced, whether it's about the number of sales leads coming in, because sales leads is going to start to drive my forecasting around my actual sales, which could lead to actual revenue. All of these things, if we add this business view on it and this business layer to it, that becomes that nice blend of CPA and IT professional.
Are like young professionals, are they entering the profession with these types of skill sets? How prepared are they as they get ready to start their careers? Or is this something that it's kind of like, you know, on the job training?
Historically, it's been on the job. And when I was in college in the mid 90s, I was a double major. I was an accounting and MIS major. And at that time, and still to today, I've always encouraged people, like, you go and do the double. It mm-hmm. is going to be so powerful for you going forward. We actually saw a decline as we went into the 2000s, the turn of the century. We saw a decline in the number of accounting and MIS majors. Part of that was because cost was a prohibitor. They were like, you know, these are the two longest majors in most schools of businesses. Mm-hmm. And you take the two longest majors and put them together, and now instead of a 4-year degree, it's a 5-year degree.
Yeah.
And I'm having to pay that much more. So I don't think a lot of people are coming into the profession with it, but it's so needed. So it becomes on the job training. which then now I've been hearing, you know, and I shouldn't say now, for the last 10 years, I've been hearing employers and firms complain, I'm having to train all these students coming in because they don't have the skills and they're not billable and I'm having to pay these large salaries, right? You just kind of hear this whole trend going on and it's like, what's going on? Going with everything.
It's this mad circle. Yeah. It's like, we need these skills. How do they get these skills? And it's just kind of what goes around comes around. Yeah. Strange stuff. So I guess that raises the question in my mind, are the ways in which we're learning changing? I mean, what is the future of learning look like? If the skills that we need are changing, does that necessarily mean that the way that we get those skills has to change as well?
I definitely think the way that we get those skills has to change. But actually, before we leave this concept of people coming into the workforce with the skills, I would love to actually touch on the CBA Evolution Project.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because that project, and I'm actually on one of the task forces that is looking at the, they call it the ISC, Information Systems and Controls portion of the CPA Evolution, or this re-envisioned CPA curriculum, which will drive changes in the exam. What we've done as part of this task force is look at what we would normally think of as the entry-level skills for an IT auditor, and how do we take those skills and where are they needed, either as part of the CPA core itself or within this ISC focus area. And so, you know, for myself, having been a past chair of the AICPA's Information Management and Technology Assurance Executive Committee, this was something back, let's see, that was, I think, 2008 was, I think, my first year as the chair there. We were talking about it back then when I asked the committee, like, what do we see as the future? What was the other project then? 2011 or 12, I think, was the, not the CPA Vision Project, CPA Horizons 2025.
Yep.
When that came out, our committee had already talked about this and said, the future CPA is kind of the entry-level CITP, right? This blend of CPA and IT. And so that's really what the task force has been focused on, is which pieces do we now think are part of the base of CPA, which is going to be driving changes in the curriculum. So if I go into the current curriculum, there's currently one course, the Accounting Information Systems course, or the AIS course, which is just one semester, generally 3 credits. And it covers the quote technology part of what you need to know. Well, I can definitely tell you that a number of things that we've identified and integrated now into the core, it's going to require more than one course. I would actually predict, we haven't actually seen it play out yet, but I'm going to predict it's actually going to be 2 or 3 courses. And it's probably going to require some integration into some of the other foundational courses, that there's at least a little bit of information systems type of concepts or IT risk type of concepts brought into all the other courses that we've seen.
So that's going to necessitate, is it not a kind of an evolution of how future CPAs are taught in colleges, yes, universities? I mean, the curriculum themselves are going to have to change.
Yep. And this is something in the profession that we've been talking about for a while, whether it's the AICPA or the state societies. We've all been talking about this future of learning and the move into the future of learning. And, you know, that's another one. I would say we saw so much resistance. Are people really learning if they're attending stuff from home? Like, how can they be learning if they're on a webcam, right? Or, I mean, not even a webcam. They're just watching a webinar. Are they really learning? And you also ask yourself the question, well, if you're just sitting there in the audience, are you really learning? Because I speak at a lot of conferences, and it's like, I see all the people on their laptops, and I'm going to guess the majority of them are not taking notes.
Right.
Right.
I mean, this conversation about what learning actually is, I remember the first time I heard somebody actually question it, and this has to have been at least 10 years ago, maybe more. It was the early days of social media, and I was sitting on a panel discussion about social media. there were a million and one of those back in the day. And one of the other panelists stood up and said, you know what? I mean, I'm learning from you guys as we share stuff on Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook, or I'm actually learning from you. Shouldn't I be getting credit for that? And, you know, and I think that that part of the conversation was a little out there for people at the time. They were just more concerned about, you know, how do I set up my account on Twitter? But that's there. That mindset has been around for a while. And we're just now getting to the point where we're actually saying, yeah, the way we learn is changing, and therefore, you know, what we learn has to change, and how that is, you know, how we learn and when, and all of that is starting to dovetail into this perfect storm of evolution of the profession, right? What kind of time frame are we looking at for this type of stuff when it comes to the CPA evolution and the new exam and that type of thing? What are next steps?
So the CPA evolution is released on this June. So it's coming up quick, and we're going to see then it's going to drive the additional changes. I forget off the top of my head when the actual exam changes are coming through. I want to say it was 2024. Mm-hmm. Maybe 2025 at the latest. So, you know, these are going to be things that are going to play through really quickly. But I think it's important, though, from what you just said, to kind of bring up two different points. So First, this whole concept of, well, I'm learning from watching the Twitter stream or whatever, right? And in our profession, it's not just about learning. Because if you think about it, a lot of this perspective I'm going to share comes from, I was involved with the Indiana CPA Society's CPA Center of Excellence, and the whole concept of competency-based learning, because their state was the first state that embraced this concept of competency-based learning rather than CPE hours-based learning.
Okay.
And when we look at this concept of competency-based learning, I think it's this concept of competency is what we as the accounting profession are really looking at when we're talking about learning. So just learning in and of itself is not really what we want our accountants to be doing. We learn all the time. I'm talking with you now, and I'm learning from things that you're saying. You're learning from things that I'm saying. Does that mean that we should get CPE for that? Right. I think all of us would say no.
Yep.
But if I'm actually taking what I've learned and I'm able to apply that and increase my competency, that is something that we want to see, because that's what we want all of our professionals to do, is increase their competency. That's what CPE is supposed to have done, right? Mm-hmm. Increasing your competency with the tax code, with the audit standards, with audit techniques, with GAAP, right? It's increasing your competency. And so we currently measure that using hours because that's the easiest way to measure it. If you look at kind of the self-study model, that model is probably the closer or the better way to start to measure. It's not the best way, but it's a better way, because you actually have to pass an exam. You didn't just sit there and listen to somebody talk. Mm-hmm. And so by passing the exam, you at least are showing that you can recall at one of the lower levels of learning, right? Recall concepts and be able to answer questions about them. Now, if we also take this and look at the CPA exam, the CPA exam also incorporates, even back when I took it, incorporated where you had to actually complete like computations, right? So there was actual application. And when we test application, then we're truly perhaps getting towards at least a base level of this concept of competency.
Right.
Take that and put that, can I apply it in different situations? And now I really have application, right? And this is kind of the difference between the C student, who perhaps can just recall information, the B student can apply it in a very standardized manner, and the A student will apply it in multiple different ones. And so the question to ask ourselves is, who do we want in our profession? Do we want the C students, the B students, or the A students? I think all of us are going to say the A students. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so if we think about that as the bar for competency, that's where I think our training needs to evolve to be able to do that. So the second point of, as we look at now, everything we've talked about, bringing remote work in, the ability to not just know these technologies, but actually apply technology and quote, IT skills within a different context. Mm-hmm. Like all of that means builds towards the building of competency, not just in a CPA candidate, but in our own staff. Because now that our staff is remote, how am I onboarding them? How am I taking this base that they have from their college education and teaching them the way that we do things at our firm or at our or at our company? And that requires a real change in the way, not just formal education, but even on the job education and training.
What do those changes look like to you? I mean, what kind of path do we have to start to take, or first steps in order to start to get where we need to go in this area?
I think a big part of that is moving away first from this concept of just because I've watched something or sat through something that I can do it. So we need to add measurement to it. And in the accounting world, we actually, if people don't realize it, we're all about measurement. How do I, right? Our accounting standards, even GAAP, our financial standards are about how do we measure these assets, capital, and how do I report on them accurately? So how do we actually measure learning? It's not by hours, it's by the ability to do something. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of hinted at the, you know, there's different indicators as I go through the different levels of learning, which is very well defined within the HR space, right? A lot of the trainings I went back and actually did graduate work in organizational development to learn all of this type of stuff. Organizational psychology to really look at how do we measure people's learning. So we need to create more of those types of measures, mm-hmm. which means also that the way that we quote test people needs to change. There needs to be more application. So that can get quite advanced. But if we go back to the actual learning, how do I make remote learning effective? Because the other thing I can tell you from not traveling is we were asked to present at all these quote virtual conferences. I say quote because most of them were webinars,
right,
which was to me a horrible experience, both for the learner and I'll be honest, for me as a speaker, because I can't get that energy back from the audience. I can't get the feedback. I can't adjust if I need to, which I normally would do if I see that people are confused or losing interest.
Oh yeah.
So we need to rethink learning because we need to get the interactivity in, whether it's through incorporating video, incorporating different exercises. The way I can run an exercise in the virtual world, I can't just tell people, okay, go in groups. And how do I know they're actually going in groups? I can put them in breakout rooms. How do I know that they're actually working? You know, we have all of these different challenges that we have to think of with learning in the virtual environment. And that's just for formalized learning. Now, how do we actually do this within the corporate setting or the regular work setting for the on-the-job training? Normally I would go and sit with a staff at their desk and lead them through something. Has everyone thought through, how are you doing that? Are people jumping on Zoom or Teams and working through things? You know, those are things that we had to learn, for example, 10 years ago when we started to work through this.
And those are really important questions because, I mean, you know, for a couple of reasons, All the research that I've seen done recently points to more and more people wanting to hold on to remote work, at least in part, right? They're not, you know, necessarily eager to go back and work 5 days in the office. They've experienced remote work and they like it and they want to keep doing it. And so the learning that they're getting has to have that element of engagement to it, right? I talked to a colleague who taught a course on a virtual course, and she said she was there looking at, you're on a Zoom screen with 20 or 30 squares there representing a person each, and they were all black boxes. Everyone had turned their camera off, and they were just, and it's like, right. How do you create an engaging learning environment when that's all you're looking at, right? So something has got to give there, I think. And I think you're dead on with that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, as we look at this, I think a lot of it, use the word engagement. And I think this concept of employee engagement, that's the buzzword to look for if people are trying to understand this. Employee engagement, it sounds like this soft and kind of anomalous thing. But again, when you go and you look at the research around it, there's actually some metrics that you can track, and really looking at how much am I engaging employees? How am I at keeping them interested? Anecdotally, I've been hearing too, and I can say from one large firm, and I've been hearing it a bunch in the small and mid-sized firms as well, that there's a much higher turnover at the entry-level staff or in the new staff. And I suspect the reason for that is that a lot of firms, and I'm going to put finance departments in there as well, because I think business is having the same issue, is they assume that a person to the organization can just jump in and be like everyone else and they're remote and whatever it is. But you need to realize that for the rest of us that have been working together, even if it's just been a year, we've already built these different relationships and working relationships with each other because we used to sit in the kitchen together or pass each other in the hall or in the bathroom and had our little conversations, or even before the meeting started, you know, kind of sitting, oh, what do you guys do for the week? And we've built all these relationships up, and these new staff, whether they're entry level or even a senior level, have not had the chance to do that. And so the trust is not there, the collaboration, the personal level collaboration, desire to see each other succeed hasn't been built up. Eugene Park actually just did a really good article that I had shared on my LinkedIn, and it actually came out via an AICPA blog article about the importance of working relationships and how, as a new staff, the partner had showed that he really cared about Eugene, because he had asked Eugene to go out to a I think it was dinner or grab a meal or something after work, and he was like, oh, now I got to talk about work the whole time. And he was pleasantly surprised that the partner had asked about him and wanted to know him as a person, mm-hmm. Not per se personal stuff, quote personal stuff, but really just to learn more about him so that he could understand him and help him and really nurture him. And that's what we really need to think about. If we're going to embrace remote work, we're going to embrace hybrid work, how do you actually create that connection with a staff that you don't see regularly in the office?
Yeah, that's a leadership skill that we didn't necessarily have to deal with 15 mm-hmm. months ago, right? And now it's become crucial. You're working on something that is really intriguing, the Center for Accounting Transformation. Bold name, by the way. I love it. What are you trying to do there? What's your goal?
I'll share a little bit of backstory. It was maybe, I want to say 5 years ago now. I've been identified or recognized as one of the top 25 thought leaders in our profession for actually many years now. But it was about 5 years ago when all of us were sitting. We have these meetings, or I guess I forget what they call them, the consortium, not consortium. Anyway, we're all kind of meeting together, and we talk about the issues in the profession. And what at that time, what I kept hearing all the other a lot of us are consultants to the profession, or leaders in the profession, and I kept hearing everyone say, I'm so tired. I'm trying to pull this firm in. I'm trying to have them see why they need to change the way they're managing people, why they need to change the way they're handling this, blah, blah, blah. And finally I said, we've been talking for years now about trying to get these people to move forward, and I am tired. I'm tired. They don't want to move. I think we should actually just let them stay behind. Mm-hmm. And I said, so from that day forward, I said, I'm going to change what I'm doing. I'm going to paint a path for people. And if they want to come with me on the journey, I will take them on the journey. And those that want to come, that are willing to be open, that want to figure out how to do this, I'm going to bring them with me. And so that was kind of the genesis of it. 5 years later, here we are. And what I've done now is figured out, what does this path start to look like? I've started grabbing other practitioners that are also instructors or teachers like myself. And actually, I like to think of us as guides, because mm-hmm. we don't know everything. But the big difference between us and someone that only teaches is that we actually understand practice. Mm-hmm. So whether it's an audit, whether it's in tax, whether it's in finance, like, we are there actually doing the work. And so when we teach, we're teaching you lessons learned from the battlefield. This is what it actually took to make this happen. These are the nuances of dealing with this type of issue. And so I've gathered all of these great practitioner instructors together. And what we're doing, what we've created is the Center for Accounting Transformation, which is creating a journey or a collective that we together, we're going to get through this journey. We can help people that are trying to understand, what is the journey? Do I want to go on it? And then as people are going through the journey, we'll help them through, we'll help them understand the concepts. So some of it is education, as we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. The second thing that we're bringing in to this is competency. We've kind of talked about that, where I've been asking all of our instructors, I don't just want lecture, I want an exercise or something that actually helps people apply the concepts. And so one of our instructors, Shihan Shakeshandra, he actually teaches about cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. So his lecture, his webinar, when you attend his webinar, he tells you about cryptocurrency, where it came from, how to do the tax basis calculations on it. And then he presents at different points an exercise, try this calculation. And then we actually do the polling, which, you know, is required essentially by NASBA. The poll is actually, what is your answer? And then we have kind of an interactive moment where he gives, so people have to reply to a poll to say what their answer is, but then he tells you what the actual answer is, and people can ask questions. Well, what about this? Or I did that. And you know, it creates this whole interaction where now we see truly learning occurring as a part of the webinar, rather than you're just sitting back. Okay. Yeah, I see how he did the computation. Hopefully when I do it later, mm-hmm. I can actually mm-hmm. do it. Right. So that's kind of the second point that we brought in. And then the third piece that we've really brought in is the concept of coaching. And not just coaching from like an executive coaching standpoint of like, where do I want to be in my life and what do I want to achieve, but coaching towards competency. Mm-hmm. So people like myself, that in the past, I've always helped coach other CITPs and develop them. We've created it as a service now, where any of our instructors could potentially serve as a coach for someone that's trying to develop this competency. And so what we do, again, it's kind of guide and teacher. We may start off where it's like, okay, you at your work is going to try and do this. And so let us help you plan it out. You go and do it. Or we are there with you, kind of helping along the way. So you can think of it as almost like the manager or partner level in a firm. And you've got a staff, and sometimes the staff may be an experienced staff that's coming through and learning something, and will help and say, okay, here's the review points. Here's where you may want to adjust this, or this doesn't look quite right. And we talk, not just say it's right or wrong, but actually talk through and help them learn. This is why I'm telling you this. You may need to think of this differently, or this is why this piece, it applies in most cases, but in this particular circumstance, it doesn't, because here's the exception. And here's how you identify that in the future. So really, we've created this whole different learning experience or competency development experience to really help accelerate the profession and to learn and adopt all of these new technologies, tools, and techniques.
That's that's great stuff. That's groundbreaking stuff, really. Is the center live now? What's the timeline here? When can people expect to hear more?
I don't know when you're publishing this, but we are planning to go live on May 24th. Okay. So once you hit that date, we would welcome people to come to improvetheworld.net is going to be our domain.
Another bold name there. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you another quick story on this one. When I was really looking at what we did, right, and the accounting profession, and if people can't tell already just from the way I'm talking about it, I really believe in our profession and what we do as accountants. And when I went back and really looked at it, I said, you know, what are we trying to do? And I used to talk about the three outcomes from accounting services, which is peace of mind, vision and clarity, and hope. And people go, that sounds so like hokey. Like what are these? We don't do that. We produce financial statements and tax returns. And I'm like, if you really think about what we do, we produce peace of mind for one. So for me, being within the IT realm, it was like, I'm worried about being having a cybersecurity breach. I'm like, well, let's talk about your cybersecurity risks. Let's talk about the controls you have around those, right? And then even if you had a breach, incident response, so that we can actually minimize that. In the end, what I'm doing is I'm giving a client peace of mind. if someone's in tax and a client gets audited or they get a letter from the IRS, they're panicking. The tax person is coming in and saying, "Don't worry, we'll this is a simple one. I just have to send them a letter. It'll all be fine. Or we'll work through this. Well, you know, I'll handle the auditor." That's all peace of mind, right? Mm-hmm. All of that is peace of mind. Vision and clarity. In my world, we look to the future. Our typical engagement is, tell me where you want to be 3 to 5 years from now. And I'll help figure out the roadmap on how you're going to get there in terms of changes in tools, changes in technology, changes in the way that you're doing business. And then we'll manage the risks along with all of those changes. Financial planning. What's your life goal? Own a house, have children, get your children through college, right? Retire at 65 or retire at 45, whatever it is. Right. That's the vision. The clarity is how you're going to get there. Well, let's develop your savings plan. Let's develop, look at your portfolio, right? That's vision and clarity in all of these different contexts. In the finance context, it's the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. You're working with the CFO is working with the CEO. Where do we want the company to be? How are we going to get there? Let's figure out the resourcing plan. Let's work with all the other department VPs and figure out how we're going to get there. That's all vision and clarity. In the end, all of this is about hope. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the small business owner, whether it's the individual, the family, whether it's the CEO, the board, the investors, it's that hope that we're going to achieve whatever we want to achieve. And so fundamentally, that's what I believe that we as an accounting profession, I purposely using the word profession because it's not just about us that are the accountants. It's about everyone that we work with, the vendors, the IT person that's providing that expertise, the actuary that's providing that expertise. All of us really are working together to provide this hope to people. And in the end, what we're doing is we're creating a better world. Mm-hmm. And the coronavirus and everything that has happened really, I think, increased the need for this because the question started to become, who can we actually trust? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Through everything that's happened with the pandemic and the elections, I can't trust government. I can't trust Congress, right? And I can't trust our politicians. Can I even also trust businesses mm-hmm. to really be doing what's best for us as a society? And when I come back and I look at our foundation and accounting, like our job is to serve the public. And oh my God, I'm getting emotional.
Yeah.
So I think all of this has really set us up to fulfill our job.
Oh God, yeah. You know, it's kind of serendipitous. I just had another one of these conversations with somebody, probably a couple of hours before you and I sat down to talk. And he had a similar thought process that he was trying to work his way through. And the words that came out of his mouth were, "Finance can save the world." And I was like, "You're dead on." So I mean, it's funny how these, you know, more and more people are thinking the same thing. And I'm right there with you. That's amazing stuff. So May 24th, improvetheworld.net. I can't wait to see what you guys come up with. Knowing you and your background, it's going to be amazing. And we were talking earlier about the CPA evolution and the new exam. And am I correct in saying people can find out more about that at evolutionofcpa.org? I think that's the website.
I believe you're correct. Yeah. Yeah. And there should be a lot coming out from it.
Yeah. And soon, I believe. Just a quick wrap up here, Donnie. What does accounting transformation look like to you? Maybe put another way, the future of this profession. What do you see 5-10 years down the road?
That's a really good question. I actually think it's hard to answer. And I've actually been telling this to my clients because, you know, I mentioned part of what we do is we say, tell me where you want to be 3 to 5 years from now. I've changed that now. I said, tell me where you want to be 2 to 3 years from now, because I think there's going to be so much fundamental change through the emerging technologies, artificial intelligence, data analytics, blockchain, like all of these things are going to so fundamentally change what doing and how we're doing it that I don't think we can look beyond 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
But I do know that we are going to see accounting skills play a much higher profile role. And people think of accounting as just the dollars. In the end, accounting to me is about making your decisions. Mm-hmm. So that would be one thing, is I would expect to see accountants involved more in decision-making. And that's just, it's not just to drive that decision, but it's about providing the data and the analysis to help make the right decision. Yep. I think we're going to see our role, whether it is in the CFO seat, whether it's an internal audit, whether it's in a tax person helping an individual make better decisions. I think we're going to see this ethical lens, that our profession is known for our ethics because of our independence and our objectivity. Yep. That increasingly, again, kind of pandemic, good example, that we need to help businesses and individuals make the ethical decision. It's not about the bottom line. It's about looking at the bigger picture, whether it's the environment, whether it's the community, whether it's health and safety, what is the right decision to make or the ethical decision to make. So we're going to be more involved in decision making. And then in the end, I really think also that it's about this concept of trust. And we need to be viewed as that independent provider of information, which, and actually I'll add, you know, the pandemic and all the elections, mm-hmm. it's leading us to also question our mass media, mm-hmm. right? Can we actually trust what's happening in mass media? Right. Well, we can't stop mass media from what they're doing, but we can be one of the ones that starts to ask the question, well, is their position truly one that is objective? You know, some media leans left, some media is in the middle. Whichever position you're coming from, the question is, though, what is the actual facts and what are the implications of the facts? And then tie that back into the risks. Mm-hmm. And that's our job as accountants, is help people analyze and understand risk. And then if they perceive risk, what are the controls that are possible? How can we mitigate these risks? So I think our whole role in business decision-making and decision-making will become a lot more important going forward.
Completely agree. Just an amazing conversation. Donnie, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for the insights. Good luck with the center. I can't wait to see what you guys come up with next. And let's keep the conversation going. I'm looking forward to seeing where we are sometime down the road. So thanks again for your time.
Thank you. No, I'm excited. And thanks for having me on the podcast.
So many great insights there from Donnie Shimamoto. Donnie is the founder and managing director of Intraprise Technologies. You can check them out at intraprise.us. He's also the inspiration architect for the new Center for Accounting Transformation. Keep an eye on that group, folks. Good stuff is on its way. You can follow along at improvetheworld.net. Every organization on the planet wants that URL. Donnie Shimamoto got it. That's so Donnie, right? Always a step ahead of the rest of us. And keep track of what's going on with the CPA Evolution Project. You'll be hearing plenty more on that in the coming months and years. All of that is at evolutionofcpa.org. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge, that is, along with a strategic skill set. We're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPA. Start mastering these future ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that's all I got, gang. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again soon.